Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up on tomorrow's program, health insurance whistleblower Wendell Potter. He used to work at Cigna, and he has written about what he learned at Cigna. He'll be on tomorrow's show. On Wednesday, Vanguard founder John Bogle and online democracy advocate Douglas Rushkoff. Both John Bogle and Douglas Rushkoff on Wednesday's show, so a lot to listen for daily here on the Brian Lehrer Show. As you know, deficit reduction is finally catching people's attention. When we learned last week that the chairs of the President's Commission on Reducing the Deficit want to raise the retirement age to 69, among other ideas, it raised a firestorm of protest. Another idea they agreed on was the need for tort reform to lower Medicaid and Medicare costs. While that sometimes means capping payouts, my next guest has a different plan to deal with malpractice costs, medical courts. And it is getting some attention from, among others, David Brooks and Bill Bradley. We'll be exploring different aspects of deficit reduction as the story rolls out. And today for this one, we are joined by Philip K. Howard, who is the founder and chair of the legal reform group Common Good and the author of Life Without Lawyers and other books. Welcome back to the show, Philip Howard.
Nice to be with you, Brian.
That little that we know from the President's Commission, which has until December 1st to formally propose a plan, mentions tort reform. Maybe it's good to start from square one today and tell people what is really meant by that phrase.
Well, first of all, tort reform traditionally means putting limits on non-economic damages. It's trying to restrict how much people can sue for generally. 38 states actually have tort reform in health care and other areas, and it doesn't actually address most of the cost problem in health care that's caused by the distrust of justice. So I was actually a little surprised that they characterized that aspect of their outline as being merely capping damages. I mean, it does save a little bit of money, but really not much.
So there's another commission. There are actually these three commissions out there. The mind is going to boggle. There's the official president's one, whose chairman reported last week. There's another one out there with Alice Rivlin, the former right. Clinton budget director, and somebody more from the Republican side. Then there's a third, put together by Esquire magazine, no less, that specified that these medical courts
right.
That you endorse are one means to cutting costs. Your organization is a big advocate for that approach. What do we mean by medical courts?
Right. So the idea of special health courts is not to block lawsuits, but simply to make them reliable, because most of the cost attributed to an unreliable system of justice isn't the direct cost, which all total is $35 billion, which is 1% of the total healthcare bill. So it's not driving the what people think is a 30% waste factor, and that includes claims that are actually good claims. That where people did get injured and should be compensated. The cost is in the second level effects. Doctors go through the day with a little lawyer on their shoulders whispering in their ear. It's very hard to measure the so-called defensive medicine, how many unnecessary tests and procedures go on. Doctors estimate it at being 20% of the total cost, which would be a huge number, $400 billion. Price Waterhouse last year estimated it at $200 billion. Based on a limited sample of tests and procedures, a group that actually are our partners in developing the health court model at the Harvard School of Public Health recently estimated it at a little shy of $50 billion a year. But those are all fairly substantial numbers.
Indeed. And my understanding is that medical courts or health courts eliminate juries in favor of medical professionals, and some critics say that makes them fundamentally anti-democratic. Aren't the opinions of ordinary people integral to our jury system?
Well, actually, the rule of law is all about having like cases be decided alike. So the reason law is the foundation of freedom is so that people can actually count on reliable social norms.
Like cases decided alike, but not if they all have the same bias.
Well, then you have a lousy system of justice. What we've done is actually not make health care professionals be the judges, but actually have judges be judges, but they would be judges making written rulings. Today you don't get written rulings, advised by neutral experts who have come from a list of approved panels. And we actually estimate, we're just trying to do pilot projects now, but we estimate that more people will be compensated in this system. They may receive less, but the first goal of the system, to me at least, is to create a system that healthcare professionals can trust to affirmatively defend them if they act reasonably. It's only when people trust justice, it's true with everybody, not just healthcare professionals, that they can actually focus on doing their jobs properly. And so, and by the way, it doesn't just affect cost, it also affects quality. So our funder for all the work we've done is the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and they're mainly interested because of the safety implications of distrust of justice. When it's chilled professional interaction so that doctors are basically trained not to speak up because they don't want to take legal responsibility. So they don't say, are you sure that's the right dosage? And, you know, use their peripheral vision to catch mistakes.
Having judges make these decisions and with written decisions is an interesting idea. I guess in most torts, civil cases, lawsuits against doctors or anyone else, the jury considers whether and how much money to award, but they don't come down with sort of a body of law, right? What the lawyers have to look at is interpretations of how those cases go, what the nature of the evidence was, and what a jury is likely to do.
Right. There's absolutely no precedent. So, for example, in the current system, babies born with cerebral palsy, this is a tragic condition. These are hardly frivolous cases. But the science says that almost nothing the doctor or hospital could have done could cause it. And yet every one of those cases is worth $5 to $10 million in the current system because juries tend to go with the tragedy. That's, you know, in studies, there's a bias towards tragedy. And the result of that is not that we shouldn't have a social insurance system to take care of kids born with cerebral palsy, but that it's changed the way obstetrics is practiced so that we have 50% more cesarean sections in this country that are medically indicated. That's bad for the mothers. It's bad for the babies. It happens to increase cost, but it also is terrible for the quality of health care.
Now, when people talk about tort reform, it's usually associated with the Republican Party and Republican politics. Republicans running for Congress this year saying repeal Obamacare, say they're going to replace it with their own version of health reform, which begins with tort reform. On the other hand, you wrote the introduction to Al Gore's Common Sense Government.
Right.
Do you think there is a bipartisan approach to tort reform that could actually succeed?
Well, first of all, I don't use the phrase tort reform. Tort reform is too associated, in my mind, with just absolute limits on who can sue for what. So I talk about legal reform, perhaps, but to me, justice is supposed to be reliable for whoever's right. It shouldn't take 5 years, which is the average, for someone who's injured by a medical mistake to get a settlement. That's crazy. So we ought to, you know, in our system, it would be much quicker. And yes, completely bipartisan. Our proposal for health courts has the support of virtually every healthcare constituency, patient safety groups, victims' rights groups, doctors, because everyone realizes that the current system in which 60 cents on the dollar goes to lawyers' fees and administrative costs with an average of 5 years to resolution is terrible for everyone.
And money to the personal injury lawyers.
Sure.
At 33% plus expenses. Did the health care reform legislation include this at all, in your opinion? Because the Republicans are saying no, but the Democrats are saying, yeah, it's in there.
No, it's not. It's not a matter of opinion. It's a matter of fact. It was really pathetic. We had all these bipartisan proposals to do pilot projects for health care, and Obama actually came out for it as well in a letter to Congress in I think, February. But no, the there's a trial, the trial lawyers lobby successfully had a few Trojan horses in there. For example, there was one provision, I think, in the law that says you can do pilot projects as long as it never does away with the jury. Well, the whole point of this is to make consistent, you know, like bankruptcy court or workers' comp system, have, you know, consistent judgments.
We have a few minutes left with Philip K. Howard. Then we're going to give you an update on the Charles Rangel ethics hearing or trial taking place in the House Ethics Committee. At this moment, we'll have some excerpts to play coming right up, but we'll finish up with Philip Howard first, founder and chair of the legal reform group Common Good, vice chairman of Covington & Burling, the author of Life Without Lawyers, wrote the introduction to Al Gore's Common Sense Government. He also blogs for The Atlantic, and we saw in your Atlantic blog that you point out that the hard thing isn't coming up with a solution to balancing the budget, although I think that's hard. The hard part is getting people to agree to something that might go against their self-interest to enact it. And you look to Anthony Appiah and his book, The Honor Code, right, as a way around that. He was just here to talk about that book. But we didn't talk about deficit reduction. We talked about human rights and democracy and things like that. What's the connection?
Well, the connection is that is that everyone in this society has been trained to demand things for themselves. Every special interest group does that. They cling for themselves. People think of individual rights somehow as being something to get for you. Well, rights were originally the framework of freedom, for everyone's freedom. So if we really want to fix everything, we have to value again the common good. Everyone will be better off if we fix the deficit. We will be better off. Our children will be better off. But that requires everyone to sacrifice some. And when someone comes and says, give me my rights, and these are worthy groups. I'm not, you know, special ed parents, people who want health care, it's all fine. The response ought to be, it's shameful for you to use the language of freedom to demand something for yourself without regard to the consequences of every other constituency, you know, who's going to pay for the elderly or, you know, whatever. We need to actually make balanced judgments, trading off all of society's goals. So we no longer accept the language of give me my rights when that's just taking things away from other legitimate interests.
So before you go, what's your analysis of where the new Republican House majority will have to start out or perhaps have to move? Because at the moment, they've been elected running against the idea of socialized medicine, but also against the idea of cutting Medicare.
Right.
And Medicare is socialized medicine, and it's the exploding right. Medicare growth that's the biggest part of the exploding deficits.
Absolutely. The problem with health care costs in this country is not mainly the new bill, which is a little bit of a Rube Goldberg machine, so it has problems. It's embedded in the old law. It is the old law incentives that cause American health care to cost twice as much as other developed countries. And until you actually align incentives for patients and doctors so that they are actually accountable if they use resources imprudently in both cases, then you're never going to bring down these costs. And the Republicans aren't willing to talk, neither are the Democrats, are willing to talk about changing the basic structure of Medicare and the others to align these incentives. Everyone runs on the basis of you're going to get your health care for free, and in a society, everyone has to have more responsibility than that.
Philip K. Howard, thank you very much. Where's the best place for people to see your stuff right
now? CommonGood.org.
Thank you. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, we will update the Rangel ethics trial currently underway in the House Ethics Committee in a minute.